Good day, welcome to the InfoQ Culture Podcast. I'm Shane Hasty. We're at the Agile 2017 conference, and I'm with Johanna Rothman. Welcome, Johanna. And Mike Griffiths.
Thank you.
Johanna and Mike were responsible, or two of the team.
Yeah, it's a much better way to put it.
Two of the team who produced the Agile Practice Guide, which is a collaboration between the Project Management Institute, the PMI, and the Agile Alliance. Johanna, Mike, welcome. Thank you very much for coming to talk to us. Can I ask you to briefly introduce yourselves? Johanna, can we start with you?
Of course. So I'm Johanna Rothman. I've written a large number of books at this point about project management, Agile, how do you use them in projects and programs, what managers need to do, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've been in the industry for a very long time, and I have the gray hair to prove it.
Great, thank you. And Mike?
Certainly, yeah. Mike Griffiths. I was a chair of the Agile Practice Guide book that's coming out here soon. I've worked in the Agile industry a long time. I helped create DSDM back in 1994 when I was in the UK. Served on the board of the Agile Alliance and also done some work with the Project Management Institute. So I was involved in the creation of the Agile Certified Practitioner credential, and more recently, yes, this Agile Practice Guide.
The PMI, the organization that we, that all the agilists want to stand up and say, this is wrong. these are the dare I say, the enemy.
Okay, so I actually want to take a chance at this, because while people might expect that Mike might represent the PMI's philosophy, I also agree with the PMI. There is nothing in the PMBOK that says you have to do waterfall. There is absolutely nothing. Now, there's a bunch of other stuff that I could complain about, and I think that a lot of people take what the PMI has said in the standards and the guides and turn it into something that they could beat people over the head with, and that was not the intent at all. Mm-hmm. And Mike, you probably want to go on from there.
No, they're great points. You know, the PMI created the Project Management Body of Knowledge, and it's a book, and books, you know, lay things out in a sequence. And many times in the PMBOK guide, it says, you know, you can do this iteratively, you can do this many times, but people see, it's a little bit like the waterfall diagram, you see it laid out on page 2, and you think that's the whole method, right? And so a lot of people look at the PMBOK guide and think, well, this is a sequential process for running a project. It's an oversimplification, it doesn't say that in there. But then, you know, and that is what we are rebelling against. It's mm-hmm. not inappropriate use of project management, it's a simplified serial command and control use of project management.
What brought about the idea of this collaboration?
You know, I think, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I'm sure the PMI realized that a lot of its practitioners were using Agile. And so they better have a product in that space. They better have some guidance for project practitioners who find themselves in this messy middle ground of, we have some agile teams, yet our PMO is still trying to track with stage gates and, you know, work breakdown structures. What are project practitioners supposed to do to bridge that gap? And they probably recognized that they needed help in credibility and expertise, and so reached out to the Agile Alliance to see if they could form a partnership and, you know, create a group of people, produce this guide. That's my understanding of the situation. But Johanna, what do you think?
Well, and I think that there's also the fact that the ACP is, I believe, the most sat for certification, the most... Or it's growing, and it's tremendously popular.
It's the fastest growing credential for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that when the PMI and the Agile Alliance decided to partner together, it was taking the best of both possible worlds. Because, you know, I run projects, and I don't have a timeline in the same sense that the PMI might have a timeline, but I have a timeline.
Mm. And milestones.
Right. Right. And I achieve those milestones a little differently. But I think it's really important that if we, certainly from the Agile Alliance perspective, and you were actually at the board meeting, I was not. If we want to influence the people who hold the hearts and minds of our senior managers, what better way than to collaborate with them?
to embrace diversity.
What a novel idea.
What a weird thought.
Yeah.
No, never works.
Yeah, I know.
Tell us a little bit about the process. How did it go producing this practice guide? What was involved?
Well, I can start off with some of the mechanics, and then maybe Johanna can talk about the dynamics of how it worked. We got like four people from Agile Alliance, four representatives from the PMI, all of those people experienced in executing projects and experienced in Agile. And so we got together, we had a kickoff meeting in Seattle where we talked about the scope and constraints for the project, because we were writing a book that had to be released at the same time as the next version of the PMBOK guide. So there was an immovable end date for that. And the degree of flexibility we had, I guess, was in how much content we wrote before that end time. So we also had some inputs provided to us. We had to be aligned with the latest version of the PMBOK guide. We couldn't really contradict it, but we could certainly augment it and say, hey, if you're running a dynamic changing project, consider this. Okay. We also wanted to be aligned with the new version of the BA practice guide that has guidance around user stories and prioritized backlogs and all that good stuff. So we wanted to make sure we were aligned with other publications, but then we also had some constraints. So we had word constraints, couldn't be huge. We had constraints in that it had to be approved by the management advisory group, by the PMI, and other constraints. So yeah, we got these eight writers together. There was only seven of us in the end. We didn't get all of our participants. And we kicked the process off with our get together, and we tried to figure out what our kind of content outline would be. And then we also had to decide how we were going to work together, because we were all distributed. And that's probably a good segue to you, Johanna, to talk about how the process worked and how we tried to, you know, write as a group.
So we paired. And we had stickies on the wall that said this section with this pair and this section with this pair. And since we had seven people, you'll notice that that is not evenly divisible by two. So Mike and I floated. We figured out how to do that. And we developed a biweekly cadence at the beginning. We thought we were working in iterations. And it turns out we were actually not working in iterations. We had a cadence of a phone call, which was a Zoom, which was really good because then we could see each other, although other people did see my messy office. But that's okay. And being able to see each other really helped us build some of the bonds that we were not able to do at our in-person meeting. Only five of us, I think, were at the in-person meeting. Horia from New Zealand, whom you know very well, was unable to be there at the time, and Jesse couldn't make it, even though he was only from DC. So we wanted to see each other. We wanted to build this collegial team. And we realized after the first 2 weeks that we were already behind. Now, the good thing is we realized this after 2 weeks.
Right. So, sounds like an Agile project.
Yeah, so this is good. So Mike and I figured out what else we could do, and we worked with people. We pair wrote, and some people literally pair wrote. Some people did a bunch of ping-ponging, right? I would write something, Jesse would review it. We had any number of possibilities for how we actually wrote, and then how we reviewed was also up to the pair. And since the pairs were ever changing, I believe that Arlo would call that promiscuous pairing, to reflect back to his paper from a number of years ago. That meant we all got to kind of know each other and understand where we were coming from. And being able to understand where we were coming from allowed us to build consensus, a limited consensus, but consensus.
That's excellent. And I think one of the things that we had to overcome to begin with was this kind of fear of writing or fear of expressing your ideas. I mean, Johanna and I had written stuff, and you eventually toughen up and realize that a percentage of your audience will hate it and criticize it. Most people will just ignore it. And then you'll get a few people that actually it resonates with them and they enjoy it. And so I just go after that small percentage of people that enjoy it. But for people that haven't written before, you know, the fact of writing and putting it down and then sharing it, even within our group, even though we were all friendly and happy and supportive, you know, it takes some courage to actually do that. And so there was resistance to even start. Johanna gave us some great advice about writing, you know, just write. And don't worry about editing and don't worry about the syntax or the voice. Just get some thoughts down and write and exercise the process and overcome that obstacle. And I think that was great. And it got us writing. And I'm glad that we did that pairing and started writing quickly, because I think if you leave it too long, that becomes an even bigger obstacle, you know, that worry about criticism.
So we continue with this biweekly cadence in November. I was not able to be there, but the rest of the team, I'm not sure if Euphoria was there either, met in November to lay out the guide, because by now we had almost 200 pages, which was about 100 too many. So we had to figure out what to do. I was on an already committed trip, and the team laid out all the pages of the guide and started to mark it up. They created yet another outline, which was really much, much better. And we erased some stuff, we added some stuff, we had a whole backlog of what to do. And so we worked on that until the end of December, I believe.
Yes.
And then we went out for our initial, was that beta or copy edit review?
I think we went out for a subject matter expert review sort of November, December time.
And then we received all those comments back, and that's when Mike had the brilliant idea of taking our SME review comments. We had 3,000 of them. The PMI has a tool which, if you only have a few hundred, might work really well. But we had an order of magnitude over that. Mm-hmm. So we had to make decisions about what we would accept with modifications, defer to a yet another practice guide, defer to our meeting in Tampa, or reject altogether. So we also peer reviewed the comments. Mm-hmm. So that's when things got really intense. I think that Mike and I, well, I'll only speak for me, but you can speak for you. I was spending at least 20, probably closer to 30 hours a week at that time, mm-hmm. managing the comments. I think you were doing at least the same.
I was. It was, a lot of work. And part of it comes down from the fact that, you know, this was a document for the PMI out of the standards group, and they have certain processes that have to be followed. So we send it out for comments, and then you have to process the comments. You can't, you know, maybe if it's something I was writing and I get a comment I don't like, oh yeah, nice idea, I just ditch that. But we had to have at least two people review every comment and then decide if we were going to accept it with modifications, Johanna said, or reject it or defer it. And so that process of everybody, at least two people, reviewing every comment. And then, of course, you know, one person said X and one person says Y. And then you've got to get together and say, okay, why do you think we need to accept this when I thought we could just reject it? So there's a conversation around that. And while it was painful, and yeah, I spent 20 hours a week on this at least, it really did improve the guide a lot. Just the thought process and the fact that somebody was confused by something, you know, forced us to reconsider how we could explain it. And it was a painful process, but I think it really improved the guide. First of all, that laying it out and removing duplicates and restructuring, and then taking into account, yeah, these 3,000 review comments that came back. It certainly did improve it, although at the time it was painful. Mm-hmm. And we should explain that the PMI doesn't usually enforce near impossible deadlines on its volunteer groups. It was just, this was conceived late to be launched with the September. I think they said they generally allow sort of 18 months to 2 years for this type of a guide. They're thinking about iteration two, and they're saying, yeah, we should allow 2 years for just the update to this guide that will happen next. But we only had, how long do we have?
9 months.
9 months to write it. So that's why, you know, it was very compressed, a lot of work for people. And when we got the comments back, a lot of work to incorporate them.
And this was a whole volunteer team. Nobody was paid for this work.
Oh,
this was...
no.
Correct.
No, no.
So it really was contributing to the state of the art, to the body of knowledge.
Absolutely. The state of the art always sounds like it's sophisticated to me, as if it's highfalutin and, you know, this is really, hey, what can everyday people take or try on their projects to, you know, be more successful. So, yeah, if that's state of the art, then sure.
I think it's more like state of the practice.
State of the practice.
State of the practice without the stuff that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Right. So who's it for?
So I think it's for project managers, project leaders. I would love it if people in a PMO would read it, because I think that they are too often removed from what really happens, especially on an Agile project. Certainly project team members. Anyone who wants to go Agile and is either concerned, unclear about what it really means. One of the things we had a lot of discussion about in our team and with the first review of the APG was this notion of hybrid. Right? What happens if you have a waterfall start, iterative and incremental in the middle, and a serial finish? Oh, and it turns out that you can do that, and you might be better off, but let's be very clear about what hybrid is. And so Mike actually included a bunch of images that at least started off from your pen, and they really clarify what we mean by hybrid and why that might be better, but is not Agile. And in the industry, everyone is using Agile terms. Every project has a product owner, whether that PO is a BA or a product manager or somebody over in another building who only sees the team once every 6 months. So the fact that we're all using Agile terms, I think that if you read this guide, you can figure out what we mean by the terms and say, okay, let me take a look at my project and my team. Are we actually doing Agile? If no, what could we do? What one step could we take to be more Agile if that will provide us business value?
So what's in there? What's some of the, not down at the bullet points, but what is the content and structure? What will I get out of this as a project manager who's trying to run it?
I think you'll get some suggestions for overcoming common challenges. So, you know, if you're trying to implement Agile in a largely traditional plan-driven organization, you know, it will give you a little bit of a roadmap of, hey, try this first and, you know, try this. And it also gives some good sort of diagnosis tools for if you're struggling with unclear requirements, you know, try user stories in a prioritized backlog. If you're struggling with stakeholders and sponsors that don't turn up to your demos, you know, consider this. So I like the sort of, we have this sort of diagnosis and potential solution. There's quite a few tables of, if you have this problem, consider this. And, you know, it's not black and white. It acknowledges that the suggested solution may not be, you know, universal for everybody, but it gives a few, you know, commonly used solutions, right, to go consider. So I think those will be useful contributions for project practitioners.
So I think one of the big things is our definition of Agile, which we as a team really struggled with to define, that it was a mindset and values and principles, that it was not about working in iterations or having stand-ups. It was about, are we using the growth mindset or the Agile mindset? Are we using the principles behind the manifesto? Do we have the values of what's in the manifesto? So I think that plus the little bit of discussion about hybrid, so you can figure out where your project is and then what to do on an Agile project. Here are things you can consider. And we use the word consider a lot. I think most of us on the writing team lean towards one or more versions of Agile. And that's okay that we have these leanings. We're individuals, we're allowed our own opinions. But we really wanted to make it possible for people to say, oh, I don't actually have to have 2-week iterations. And if I want, I could have 3 or 4. Or I could work in flow and have a cadence of decision making, right? That we have options for how we do our work. And as long as we are using the Agile mindset, then we are probably on the right path. And I think that we have appendices, which I no longer remember. Our appendices are actually really useful.
Yeah, we have an overview of the different Agile methods. We have discussion around what hybrid is. We also have things like a suitability filter for project and organizational characteristics that might suit or warn against the use of Agile. Yeah, they're useful things. And I think where we add value over one particular methodology's publication is that it is approach agnostic. So we have, you know, we have a little bit of coverage of lean, as Johanna said, iteration and flow-based agile. We talk about Kanban. And so it's approach agnostic, and it's really what you would expect to see on most projects most of the time within industry.
So where do I get it?
So you get it from the PMI, and I believe it's early September of 2017. I don't remember if it's 6 or 9 or something like that.
I think
that.
It's September the 8th, and it's available in a couple of formats. So you can buy the paper copy from the PMI, but you can also download it from the Agile Alliance or the PMI website electronically. So if you're a member of the Agile Alliance or the PMI, then it's a free electronic download.
So free to members of both organizations?
Correct.
Yes, to either organization, mm-hmm. Yes.
Any final advice for our listeners?
So one thing, first of all, you should all read our experience report, because Mike and I wrote an experience report, and we have about 45 lessons learned. But one of the big things I learned is that every time I do an Agile project inside a less Agile culture, right, where it comes from a more traditional perspective, the culture change is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. That changing minds and changing hearts and changing souls is not something you do overnight. And it does not matter what people think they can change. It matters how much their reality bumps up against your values. So we found that on this project, that we thought we had agreement from some people to do things in a more agile way, and as push came to shove, maybe not so much. And that was not, I'm not blaming them, because they were pressured. They were under tremendous pressure from other people in their organization. So for me, culture change is the biggest problem. Challenge may be a better word. And it's slow.
I would encourage people to consider helping us in the next iteration of this. I mean, we had 9 months, and I think what we've produced is the best we could have done in that time frame. We had, you know, over 3,000 comments. Most of them were, I don't understand this, or this diagram's wrong, or whatever, and we fixed that up. But there was an awful lot of really good suggestions that we weren't able to incorporate. And when you have that hard deadline, we had to ship, and we shipped with, I think, the most valuable content. But we would love to get people engaged for the second iteration of this guide that will occur in a more sane cadence, right? So we don't have 9 months for the next version. We've got 2 years for the next version. And we're looking for people that can help us move this forward. It's always tricky trying to talk about Agile for traditional project managers. But just because it's difficult doesn't mean we shouldn't try. In fact, just because it's difficult probably means we should try more. And I really want to hope that we get people engaged in the process and continue this Agile practice guide so that the next version, you know, is broader and deeper than what we have now. And, you know, in the next couple of iterations, we really improve it. So it becomes the go-to guide for people in the trenches trying to implement Agile in less than Agile organizations.
Johanna, Mike, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks.